Welcome to Generations Friends. Kevin Slusser with you. I'm Executive Director for Christian Home Educators out here in Colorado. But the reason that I'm here, I'm a father of five, and we homeschool our children out here on the eastern plains of Colorado, as does Dave Buhner, also in studio with me today, and just a couple of fathers concerned about the issues. Why? We got reasons. Reasons are, number one, God exists, we want to serve him all the days of our lives, but secondly, we have children and grandchildren. You think we care about the kind of country we leave for our children and grandchildren? I think so. And I'm guessing there are a few other people out there like this, and that's why we broadcast. Now, today we want to talk about economies. I'm concerned about the economy because, well, did I mention my children and my grandchildren? Well, a couple of new reports just out. The PPI hit 1%. That's the producer price index, hit 1% in January. Annual rate, 12%. Unbelievable increases in inflation, folks. I don't know, did you catch it? Gas prices are up some 50 cents. And some people are saying $4 a gallon this summer. That's going to be tough for taking family vacation, Dave. I mean, these things really affect our families, don't they?
Well, yeah, they do. The good thing about gas prices is the corn prices are going up, too. So it'll cost more to feed your family on vacation as well.
Yeah. Inflation high, really high. Not sure the CPI is a proper index. That is the consumer price index the government puts together. I'm not sure that is an effective way of measuring inflation for a number of reasons. Here's Bill Goss of PIMCO. He says the CPI is a con job foisted on an unwitting public by government officials. The government says that if the quality of a product got better over the last 12 months, that it didn't really go up in price, and in fact, it may have actually gone down. And since 1998, they've used this new methodology. So if you have, you know, an improvement in computers running a little faster, they're going to, you know, decrease the CPI for that. They do the same thing for DVDs, washer, dryers, refrigerators, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Today, no less than 46% of the weight of the U.S. CPI comes from products subject to these adjustments. Also, the PIMCO, this company called PIMCO, calculates that without them, and similarly disinflating substitution biases, Greenspan's favorite inflation measure, the PCE, would be between 0.5% and 1.1% higher each year since 1987. So that would be a 15 to 25% higher inflation index cumulatively over those, say, 20 years. Also, the CPI does not include the increased costs of government. And that's actually, it turns out to be about 44% of the average person's paycheck out there. All right, so 44% of your life is not calculated into the CPI. Incidentally, property taxes jumped 48% since 1995 on average across America. That's an increase of 48%, and that's approximately 30% higher than inflation. Well, CPI was over 4% in 2007, and Dave, this really affects people. For example, if you pulled out a CD and you got 5% last year, you're being taxed on those increases, my friends. You're taxed on the interest. And guess what? Your investment did not then keep up with the CPI. Even the CPI, I'm not talking about CPI adjusted for some of these other increases. And yet, you know, my guess is that every other person out there thinks that, you know, they got $10,000 in interest off the $200,000 CD. They think that was profit. That wasn't profit. That just represents a loss. That $10,000 on that $200,000 investment on that CD was a loss, my friends. It was a loss. But as it turns out, I think what's happening is inflation is a hidden taxation. In other words, the value of your investments are decreasing. You don't think they are. Dave, what do you think? You think the average person, $200,000 CD, getting 5%, $10,000 interest last year, do you think that person figured he got an increase on the amount of money he invested?
Well, I think a vast majority of Americans have understood that if you invest at a CD at 5%, you're not keeping up with inflation. There's a disincentive to save, which is why the rates of savings in America is as low as it's ever been. And in fact, the amount of debt incurred by the individual is greater than it's ever been.
You know, Dave, the bottom line is inflation is a hidden taxation because the biggest debtors, as you mentioned, do profit from this, like the federal government. Effectively, what's happening is they're devaluing the entire economy. You know, and Dave, I was excited for just about 2 minutes when I heard that the Democrats were giving me a big tax rebate this year. You hear it? I get a like $1,200 tax rebate coming up in, what, May or June of this year because, well, it's an election year and they want us to feel warm and cozy about what's happening with their federal government, right? So all the Dems and the Repubs are very happy about giving us this great $1,200 tax rebate until I figured, now, wait a minute, where's that coming from? I think that's coming from me. I think that is coming from me. And that's coming from, effectively, government debt, because the government is devaluing all the money that I have in my savings accounts right now.
Well, technically, it's not really coming from you. It's coming from your children. They're the ones that are going to have to pay it. So you might try and find an investment to put it in them. But really, that rebate, that's an attempt to buy your vote. That's all that is. Yeah. I mean, what is your vote worth? Is it worth $1,200? Can I get it for $1,200?
See, ladies and gentlemen, it's all a big lie. Don't you understand? They're lying to you. By devaluing the economy through inflation and through massive government debt, they're lying to you about how much they're taxing you every year. The Bush administration has just presented their 2009 budget, Dave, and of course it's the biggest in history. It features a huge $400 billion deficit, of which, what is it, $120 billion is this tax rebate or whatever? Who cares? I mean, hey, they're robbing from part of me to pay the other part of me. And they finally, hey, the Bush budget has just topped $3 trillion. Believe it or not, Bush also had the distinct pleasure to sign a budget that was topping $2 trillion in 2002. Can you believe it? Dave, he topped $2 trillion and $3 trillion. First president to top, you know, double $1 trillion in 8 years of his administration.
Yeah, he's going on a spending binge with those credit cards. We used to say he's spending like a drunken soldier, and then I realized that drunken soldiers only spent their own money.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as it turns out, my friends, George W. Bush has increased the budget by 67% as compared to President Clinton increasing the budget by 32% in his 8 years. So you see, the increases under King George have been double what the Democrat was. And again, folks, we are struggling to determine whether Hillary Clinton is the most conservative of the top three candidates running for the 2008 presidential elections. McCain, Hillary, Barack Obama. I'm trying to struggle with this. Who's the most conservative? It could be Hillary Clinton for 2008. It may be time to get behind Hillary for 2008. And Dave, tongue-in-cheek here, but this is exactly where we've been headed. Because effectively, folks, we don't work by principle anymore. We work by lies. We don't submit ourselves to the laws of God. Whether we're Republican or Democrat doesn't matter. We've abandoned the law of God generations ago. We could care less about the limits of taxation that God's law supplies in 1 Samuel 8 should be no more than 10%. We could care less about the graduated income tax system, which is a Marxist concept, not a biblical concept. We could care less about what God's law says about telling the truth. Bottom line is we've got lies that are governing the way that we run our economies today. But what's the effect on all the American households out there? You know what? Just 50 years ago in 1950, the average household was giving $1 of $100 to the federal government. Today, it's closer to $25 per every $100 they receive. So government today on the federal level are taking some 25 times what it was taking from the average American household back in 1950. Do you think there's been an impact on the American household? Of course there has been. We're sending our wives to work. That's what's happening. Here's a recent U.S. Census Bureau report on median household income. If you discount the income of wives and look at the median individual income in households in America, the average guy is making less than he was 30 years ago. That's right, less than he was 30 years ago. Talking about the median individual income here. The male head of household, no spouse working, his median income fell 8% adjusted for the CPI since 1969. Now, that's the CPI, not adjusted for all the imprecisions we just talked about a few minutes ago. Again, folks, the average male head of household making less than he was in 1969. Now, the guys have had to compensate for this by sending their wives to work. So most households are actually making just a little bit more than the CPI because they're sending their wives to work. They had to send their wives to work. Why? Because they're paying the federal government 25% of their GNI. And we're spending 48% on government on all levels, local, state, and federal levels. That's why we're sending our wives to work. The average person today is making less money adjusted for inflation than they were in 1969. This is amazing to me. Despite the tremendous revolutions in technology and computers, automation, et cetera, the average guy making less money adjusted for inflation today than he was in 1969. Now, why is this happening? I'm going to talk about that in just a moment on this program. Why? Who's to blame for the failure of the American economy? What's happened? We're going to talk about that in just a moment on Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson. Back on Generations, my friends, this is Kevin Swanson. CPI, the Consumer Price Index, inflation going through the ceiling. But one of the significant reasons why the average guy, the median individual income, has fallen since 1969 is because, actually, the number one contributing factor, Dave, is massive wasteful government, massive taxation, massive government debt, et cetera, et cetera. It's the government's fault. Am I off base here?
I don't think you are, because the government takes a large portion of the economy.
As in 48% of the economy, way up from 1910. That's 38% from 1910.
Almost half of the economy is consumed by the government. But the government doesn't manufacture. They're not a producer. They don't make things that you go buy. Now, wouldn't perhaps the exception that you're not sending your child to a private school, so in that case they're producing something. But they don't make toasters. They're not producing things other than, I think, forms and triplicate.
Yes, lots and lots of paperwork. And what they do is they come up to a guy, put a gun to his head, and say, give me 48% of your income every year. And yet they produce very little. It's not as if they're producing things. They're building houses and producing toasters, et cetera, et cetera. A lot like Butch Cassidy. I mean, I was watching a movie about Butch Cassidy who gets on a train and robs people and takes their money, but he really doesn't produce anything. I keep thinking, what is Butch Cassidy producing besides maybe an interesting train ride? You know, it's obviously more interesting if somebody robs the train, and I don't know if that entertainment, you know, what is that? I'm not sure Butch Cassidy is producing anything. Similarly, the government's not producing much either.
Well, Butch Cassidy did produce the security industry, those that would guard other people's wealth. So you see, that created jobs. Yeah. Of course, now they lost their money up front instead of losing it to Butch.
Right.
Yet one of the problems with this sort of economic approach is that you take market forces out of the market. You don't have a choice whether or not you're going to pay for the public schools. You must pay for the public schools. Who do the public schools compete with? Nobody, because they're already getting paid.
They're getting paid $7,000 a student in this state, folks. $7,000 a student. I homeschool five of my children. That would effectively save the state $35,000. Unbelievable, by just me homeschooling my children. And yet, Dave, they got a gun to the head, and they're saying if you don't pay the $7,000 for every kid in this neighborhood to get a bad education through our monopoly, where there is no free market working here, rather we're just going house to house and putting a gun to the head and saying you give $7,000 per kid or we put you in jail. You know, that's kind of a bad way to run an education program. That's a monopoly, and I don't think government is intended to run these sorts of things. The Bible says government is there for defense and justice. Read it. It's in Romans 13, my friends, if you care what God says about civil government. By the way, he came up with the idea. And so I think he has a right to say, you know, a few things about it and so forth. And did I say God is the king of the universe as well? I think he is. I think he's ahead of all this. He has the right to tell us what to do and all that. That's our worldview, just slipping out here a little bit here.
Kevin, I think part of the issue is that we don't know how much we're taxed. They withhold income. We don't have to write them the check. That's part of the problem. Now, take one of the most famous tax evaders, Willie Nelson. By the way, don't use him for your tax accountant either.
Yeah.
It's not very successful there. But imagine he puts out a record album, and in his tax bracket, they say, you know, that's a really nice album, Willie. There's 10 songs on it. We own 8 of them. You get to keep 2 of those. We're going to own 8 of your tracks because the tax bracket he's in. So he goes to labor to make 10 songs, and the government says, we'll take 8 of them. And then they go release it on their own label.
Yeah. And Dave, and a lot of people are suggesting the problem with the fact that people are making less money and we've got a CPI that is making it harder to make ends meet is ultimately because we're not redistributing the wealth as much as we ought to. We're not as Marxist as we ought to be. And again, typical for liberals, they always point to the wrong thing as the solution to the problems facing us. They actually say it's more government. Get more government bureaucracy, get more control over the economy, and tax the successful successful. Tax the really hard workers more than anybody else and effectively undermine the incentive to do well in our economy. And that's the solution to our economic problems. Rather than blaming government, they're blaming the guys that are actually producing things.
Well, at a philosophical point, it's a systemic issue, because when you take an economics class in high school or college or beyond, typically you'll have a definition of economics that says something like it is the distribution of scarce resources. So the emphasis is on distribution, for the socialist, redistribution. But really, it's not on production. It's not on expanding the resources. Before there was the microchip, we just had sand. But somebody took dominion over that sand and made microchips and made the silicon chip and makes computers. Now that sand is worth many, many times more than it was worth before, and the economy expanded. It wasn't a distribution. It was an expansion.
But what did he do, Dave, with the sand? He applied the work of the mind and the work of the hands to accomplish it. And this is the fundamental reason why our economy is failing, my friends. It's not fundamentally the government. It's fundamentally the people that elect their government. It's the people, it's the heart of the people that have gone south. It's effectively the fragmentation of the family that has undermined the character of the nation. And Dave, as you know, the character of the people is always tied to the economic success of the nation. We are not the people we were 100 years ago. The average kid graduating from high school is not Almanza Wilder. The average girl graduating at 15 is not Laura Ingalls Wilder. The bottom line, my friends, is the character of this nation is undermined. We don't fear God. We're not humble. We're not hard workers. We don't know how to exercise self-discipline. We run out and fornicate with everything that moves out there. This nation has the highest divorce rate of practically any developed nation. We have a 37% illegitimate rate in this nation. So these are the fundamental reasons that are undermining the economy. Of course, the average socialist and Marxist out there, Dave, doesn't agree with me. He says, no. The problem is government isn't controlling enough things. We need to be more immoral, even more immoral. We need more homosexuality. We need even more fornication. We need even more people with less self-discipline. We need the government to continue to grow and supply all of our needs, and we need to continue with this redistribution of the wealth by means of the graduated income tax system. That's what the liberals are saying.
Yeah, Kevin, the socialist, the Marxist, he is concerned with distributing the wealth. He wants the government to be in charge of distributing it. The selfish American is only concerned about getting food on his table. He's not concerned with the Dominion mandate. That is producing. If he was concerned with producing, God would give him food on his table. But he's not concerned with producing. He's only concerned with getting food on his table. He's willing to be Butch Cassidy and use the tax code to do it, because that will put food on his table.
And if he was willing to produce, he wouldn't work a government job. Right? Effectively, he'd want to go out and produce. He wouldn't want to work on some wasteful government job. I know there's job security there, much like Social Security, where you don't really have to produce anything. You can tax and regulate people right and left and be as much of a drag to the economy as you can possibly be, but you get paid for that. Dave, yeah, ultimately I think we should be concerned about production. But listen to this Barstool Economics story that's been flying around the web here recently. I wanted to read it for you. Suppose that every day 10 men go out for beer and the bill for all 10 comes to $100. If they paid their bill the way we pay our taxes, it would go something like this. The first four men, the poorest, would pay nothing. The fifth would pay $1. The sixth would pay $3, the seventh would pay $7, the eighth would pay $12, and the ninth would pay $18. The tenth man, the richest, would pay $59. So that's what they decided to do. The 10 men drank in the bar every day and seemed quite happy with the arrangement until one day the owner threw them a curve. Since you are all such good customers, he said, I'm going to reduce the cost of your daily beer by $20. Drinks for the 10 now cost just $80. The group still wanted to pay their bill the way we pay our taxes, so the first four men were unaffected. They would still drink for free. But what about the other six men, the paying customers? How would they divide the $20 windfall so that everyone would get his fair share? They realized that $20 divided by six is $3.33. But if they subtracted that from everybody's share, then the fifth man, the sixth man, would each end up being paid to drink his beer. So the bar owner suggested that it would be fair to reduce each man's bill by roughly the same amount, and he proceeded to work out the amounts each should pay. And so the fifth man, like the fourth, now paid nothing, 100% savings. The sixth now paid $2 instead of $3, 33% savings. The seventh now paid $5 instead of $7, that's 28% savings for him. The eighth now paid $9 instead of $12, that's 25% savings. The ninth now paid $14 instead of $18, that's 22% savings. And the tenth guy now paid $49 instead of $59, that's 16% savings for him, so not as much for him than for the rest of them. Each of the six was better off than before, and the first four continued to drink for free. But once outside the restaurant, the men began to compare the savings. I only got a dollar out of $20, declared the sixth man. He pointed to the tenth man, but he got $10. Yeah, that's right, explained the fifth man. I only saved a dollar, too. It's unfair that he got 10 times more than I did. That's true, shouted the seventh man. Why should he get $10 back when I got only two? The wealthy get all the breaks. Wait a minute, yelled the first four men in unison. We didn't get anything at all. The system exploits the poor. The nine men surrounded the tenth and beat him up. The next night, the tenth man didn't show up for drinks, so the nine sat down and had beers without him. But when it came to pay the bill, they discovered something important. They didn't have enough money between all of them to even pay half the bill. And that, boys and girls, is how our tax system works. The people who pay the highest taxes get the most benefit from a tax reduction. Tax them too much, attack them for being wealthy, and they just may not show up anymore. In fact, they might start drinking overseas where the atmosphere is somewhat friendlier. And good point there, Dave. Of course, this is for the average guy out there who's probably sitting in the bar not really thinking about any of these things. And the ultimate problem, my friends, is our hearts have turned away from God. We have become an immoral people without character, and we could care less about the law of God, which in Exodus 30, verse 15 says, the rich shall not pay more, and the poor shall not pay less when it comes to taxes. The Bible condemns the sin of envy, envying others because they have more than you do. Envious nations inevitably fall apart economically because the hearts of the people have turned against God and begin coveting their neighbor's good things, and they institutionalize their covetousness and their envy through socialist countries like ours. Well, the solution, my friends, I think, is to go back to the Word of God and begin living our lives by God's Word. Don't teach your children to envy. Reestablish the economy of the family by means of this vision of production. Become a productive family. Maybe even establish your own home business and start producing some things that you can trade with others. Well, folks, if you want my vision of what it's going to take to put this nation back together, economically and politically and everywhere else, and you're going to have to get a copy of my book, The Second Mayflower. Again, The Second Mayflower, it is out in hardback cover, and you can get a copy of it right now by going to my website, kevinswanson.com. It's right there on the front page of my website right now, The Second Mayflower, a vision for reestablishing this nation on the principles that once founded her some 400 years ago. This nation is the most God-blessed nation on the face of the earth, my friends. I think she can be that way again if families will once again regain a vision, a biblical vision for our nation. Grab a copy of The Second Mayflower at my website, kevinswanson.com, right now. And you can catch this program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we lay down a vision for the next generation.